Now in their second season, Leadership of the Leaf, with more cigar knowledge and more leadership insights. Two great leaders smoking great cigars. Here's our host, Austin and Dice. Grab a drink and jump in with a cut and a light.
And welcome to another episode of Leadership of the Leaf. My name's Austin.
And I'm Dice.
Hey, Dice. How are you today?
Hey. I'm doing swell, my friend. Swell.
That's good. That's good. Hey, that's a nifty looking cigar you got there. What you smoking on?
That's why I'm doing swell. There's a cigar in my hand. How could I not be?
Fair question.
Probably going to say the name wrong.
Oh, I can't wait.
La Galera, Connecticut.
Hey, that's good. And what Hennessy are you pairing that with?
I actually did some. Man, there's no enthusiasm there. Like, Hennessy, yeah, what is it?
Yeah.
I smoked some cherry wood into some DS.
Okay, nice. That sounds pretty delicious.
It is.
Nice. All right, cool. I am smoking a La Galera Habano.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
See, that's awesome, because I know you smoked the Connecticut on air before. Now you smoked the Habano on air before. Well, I said before. Now. Right now. Not before.
Time is hard.
Time is difficult. So now, you mofo, I'm going to have to pick up a Habano?
I mean, that's only if you want to, sir. Who knows? This may be a terrible cigar, which I doubt. And I'd recommend you never smoke it. I don't know.
Sir,
what?
Sir, yes. You must be educated in this. And this is a fact. This is 100% a fact.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
There is no such thing as a bad cigar.
There's only better ones?
There's only better ones. Okay? All right. We're good?
Uh-huh.
Now, you just took a drink of something.
Oh, I did. It's delicious.
Ah, how delicious is it?
Very, very delicious.
Please share.
Oh, it is the Holding Station. It's a blend of straight whiskeys.
Huh.
It's very nice. I picked it up at Total Wine.
Any water? Cubes?
Nope.
Neat?
Well, I had ice. Yeah, it's on the rocks.
Oh, okay.
So, wow. when the ice melts, it adds a little bit of water, but that's about it. But it is delicious. I recommend you pick some up.
Yeah. Holding Station.
I know.
Is that the new Hennessy or some shit? What are we doing here? Come on.
I'm trying to broaden your horizons.
We've been through this before. I picked up a bottle of Redbreast.
Did you really?
I picked it up in my... Don't get too excited.
Oh, no. I remember you talked about this.
Yeah.
And
so I picked up the Redbreast, and then I walked by, and I looked over, and I saw...
I'm already done with you.
Saw Hennessy. That Redbreast was left on the shelf where the Hennessy was.
A bad decision was made that day.
I'm going to have to, disagree.
I
will agree. Redbreast was fucking amazing. I give that to you. But Hennessy came home with me, if you know what I'm saying.
A bad decision was made by all. I would have expected that decision after, 11 p.m. and you drunk and you just... You going home with somebody. It may not be the best looking girl, but you go home with somebody.
Oh, I see what you did there. What's our cigar topic this episode, sir?
Oh, it is how to rehumidify a cigar. So, maybe you're given a cigar that somebody's like, I don't really smoke them, or hey, I have no idea how to take care of them. Here, why don't you have it? You're better at this than I am. Or maybe, despite all your best efforts, you make a mistake and you leave a cigar out and you're in the desert and it dries out. And it sounds like crackling leaves when you pick it up. Maybe that's what happens. But we're going to talk about how to rehumidify that cigar.
That's oddly, the first option you chose there was oddly specific.
Maybe they left it in a freezer. I don't know. Something happened.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
So before we get into that, what is our leadership topic? Because I know people are just on the edge of their seats dying to know.
Our leadership topic is how to develop managers into leaders.
Ooh. I know we've talked about the difference of between the two.
Yeah.
And leadership is a skill you can learn. Leaders.
Yeah.
No, no, stop it. We've talked about this. Go back, listen to the previous episode. Managers are not leaders.
All right. I will go back and listen, sir.
Go for it. But we all know a dry cigar is something that all cigar smokers want to avoid. It's usually a bad tasting smoke. The cigar falls apart. It you know, your cap falls off and then it unravels. You just have a bunch of dried leaves and it's just garbage. It's a bad experience.
Sound like you're talking from experience.
I may have had that happen to me a couple times.
Yes.
So a cigar needs to be kept at optimal levels of humidity for the best smoking experience. Usually a relative humidity. I like to keep it somewhere between 65. So I go from 62 to 68. That's about where I like my cigars. There is such a thing as the 70-70 rule, where it's 70% humidity, 70 degrees Fahrenheit. I think 70 is almost a little bit too wet sometimes.
Yeah.
But you need to figure out what works best for you and your climate and your certain tastes.
Right. And I looked into that 70-70 rule. There's a lot of debate online about 70-70 rule. And what people are not understanding is that is a great starting point, especially for anyone that's new or anyone that's just starting in the game of cigars and everything.
Yeah.
That's a great starting point. That's not saying by law, like it's one of the commandments of cigars that it has to be 70-70. People get that and they want to take that and run with it to the end zone, but that's definitely not the case. That's a great starting point. As you say, yours is around 62 to 68.
Yeah.
And I like to keep mine close to, actually I like to keep mine close to 70.
Yeah. And I have no problem with 70. I think the 70-70 rule, in all fairness, I think it came out of ease of remembering. So when you're talking to somebody and they're new and they're like, what do I do? And you just go 70-70. That you can't go wrong, 70-70. And they're like, oh, that's really easy to remember. All right, cool, yeah. And then as you get into it, you kind of go, I actually don't mind 65. I think that gives me a better smoking experience. Okay, cool. So then you take it down to 65. And I don't like saying it's a rule. It's more like a guideline.
Yeah.
So, but let's see, you know, let's say whatever the reason is, you leave it out, it gets dried, you get given it, it's dry, you got to rehumidify it, you got to rehydrate that cigar. The first thing I could say is this has to happen slowly. It is not something where you stick a dried out cigar into a humidor at 70% humidity and then you take it out the very next day and it's all good to go. It is not going to happen that quickly. It's got to take weeks, months. You're in for a project.
It's a labor of love.
It is. So
what would happen if you did that?
If you rushed it?
If you just like, you rehumidify this and you throw it in all willy-nilly, what could happen?
Well, so if it's not properly rehydrated, you're going to smoke it hot, which usually gives you a bitter ammonia type taste, and it's very unpleasant. It's just one of those things. And the other thing is, you could unravel the cigar. The cap, the glue gets dried out because it's a natural glue, right? They're not using super glue on these motherfuckers. It's a natural plant-based glue. And then that dries out, your cap's going to pop off, your binder and your wrapper are going to come off, and you're just going to be left with a pile of leaves.
Well, also, when you're rehumidifying it or whatever, and you put it in there with your humidity, and you don't do it slowly, you ever put like a bottle in the freezer and you fill it all the way up with water, and you put it in the freezer and forgot about it?
And that thing pops open?
Yeah. So essentially, that's what you would do with your cigar if you were just to throw it like in the deep end for rehumidification instead of doing it as a gradual, slow process.
It's going to take Depending on the ring gauge, I would say a minimum of 2 to 6 weeks. I would argue that it would take longer than that. And it also is going to depend on how dry the cigar was when you started. Like if somebody left it out of the Arizona desert and then gave it to you and said, hey, fix this, you're going to be there. All right, cool. Yeah, I'll fix it. It's going to take like 3 to 6 months.
Yeah. How I described to someone, it was you, like that old commercial, you said it and forget it.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to be a while. But the first thing you got to do is you got to prepare your humidor. If your humidor is what caused the issue in the first place, you've got to reseason it. You need to fix it. If you have a glass top humidor, maybe you need to seal around the glass with some food grade silicone that doesn't leave a nasty taste or smell in your humidor.
Yeah, wipe it down, wet cloth.
Yeah, distilled water.
Distilled water is the best. Some people say you should use like bottled water, but I'm still more of a distilled water kind of guy. If you use tap water, it contains minerals and there's other stuff in your tap water, so that could cause like clogs in the vent holes of the humidor. It could cause mold, whatever. Tap water is nasty. Come on.
Yeah, honestly, it is. use distilled water.
Safe for drinking. Yeah, just
use distilled water. It's the best. So you're gonna re moisten the humidification element, whatever that was. If it's the green sponge that came with your humidor, chuck it in the trash.
Throw it
and
away.
Go get you some Bovita packs or something else. The little beads or some other type of good humidification system. The humidor slowly return to optimal levels, whatever that is, 65, 70%, whatever it is. Once your humidor has reached the right humidity, your cigars have been rehydrated. The cigars can be placed back into the humidor, your regular cigars. We're not talking about the dry one yet.
Someone at work mentioned something about the sponge, the green sponge. Like, what's the best way for this, like dampening the sponge to get everything to work properly? I was like, take the green sponge, find your nearest trash can, and throw it in that. And they just looked at me with their mouth like, what? What? Really? What? And then I was like, pick you up a few Bevita packs, whatever humidity you like, and then just chuck those in there, close it for a day or two, and then now you can start using it.
Yeah, just keep a hygrometer in there and measure it.
He ordered Bevita packs from Amazon like before we finished our conversation.
Yeah, they're super easy. People rag on Bevita packs, but it's such an easy set it and forget it type thing. I just don't ever have to worry about it.
That's what I told him. I was like, it's probably the easiest method to take care of your humidor and your cigars. By far, it's probably not the most cost saving. Depending on how often you go through or whatever. It's not the most cost saving because I can buy a gallon of distilled water for a couple of bucks.
Yeah, and if you had one of those active humidification systems for like a cabinet humidifier, sure, go with that. That's great. But if you have just a desktop humidor, you could go to any brick and mortar cigar store, Amazon, whatever.
It's worth it.
And you could pick up like a 5-pack of Bovitas for like $15 at like 65 or 69%, whatever you like the best. But once you get it all in there, you set the dry cigar in there and leave it the fuck alone.
Not all the way leave it the fuck alone. Not 100% quite leave it the fuck alone.
For a couple of days.
And then you want to
rotate.
Yeah.
Because guess what? The part that's being contacted by other cigars and or the wood, if it's being contacted by the wood, it's getting more humidification than anything else. Right? Because you just wiped down all of your wood with distilled water when you're seasoning it. And now it needs to be rotated so it gets humidified properly all the way around. It's like cooking a steak. You don't just set the steak on one side under the grill and then close the lid and go, All right. Well, I'll see that in 30 minutes.
It's going to be delicious.
Can't wait. Not going to work. So once you turn it and you turn it and you turn it and you turn it, and it's, you think it's been, you know, long enough, you kind of squeeze the end, just gently squeeze the end. If it sounds like crackling leaves, leave it alone. If it's kind of got a little bit of a spring, but not soggy, it's properly humidified. So once you've done that, you want to test it before you light it.
Yeah, that's where you were talking about gently pushing on the ends with your finger. It should feel firm and give slightly, kind of like, you know, the palm of your hand there, where the right under your thumb.
The heel.
Is that what that's called?
Yeah.
I call it under the thumb. Pressing against your finger, when you squeeze it, it should kind of, like you said, sponge back. Of course, if not, it's too dry. And sometimes if you're one of these sloppy guys that wet your humidor out too much, then you could have a spongy, sloppy cigar.
Yeah.
Which you really can't come back from that one.
Yeah. Now, I will say, even with rehydrating this, if you let your cigars get too dry or too damp, you're damaging them. You are going to impair the smoking experience that they would offer. Best way is to just invest in a quality humidor, check the humidity level on a weekly basis. I'm not saying that it won't smoke good and it won't taste good, but it's not going to be as good as it could have been had you not had the issue in the first place.
Right. So the best thing to do is not have the issue in the first place.
Not have the issue in the first place.
Hey.
All right. So during the research.
Yeah, man, this research was good. I enjoyed it.
I got shit to say.
Okay.
According to research, there are three techniques. Two of these are not terrible. The first one I think is absolute dog shit garbage, and I would never recommend this and ever.
Well, when we was doing the research for this, there's three techniques, right? So I had to end with, I think you and I both agree, is probably one of the better ways to actually do it. So we'll go through these three techniques just so maybe have a little laugh. Maybe these techniques work for you. I don't know. I'm more to the last one, not the last. Our last one.
All right. I got to say this out first and foremost before I even jump into this. Do not follow the first example ever. There is so much wrong with this, and we'll get into it, but I'm irate that it's even on the internet because it's so bad. But the first one is leave your cigar box in your bathroom. So if you store the cigar box on a shelf or inside a cabinet in the bathroom where you take your daily shower, the cigars will become a fixture in your bathroom for a week or two while they undergo the rehydration process. If you prefer, you can store the box of cigars out in the open. Many cigar boxes are of rich, ornate construction and will look like eye-catching decorative pieces while they're being salvaged. Fuck no, they're not. They're going to... God.
Okay. Well, I was like, I could just picture my wife like, what the fuck is that on back of the toilet? Oh. Sweetie, that's my cigar box.
What? First off, the daily shower has so much heat and humidity, you're going to warp your box and you're going to make your cigars soggy on the outside and dry on the inside like a rare steak. It doesn't work. It's going to be a bad idea. And even if you do make it work, guess what? Would you ever drink your shower water?
Hell to the no. Soap, dirt, grime, shampoo, just nah.
Oh, so you don't want that flying in the air and possibly landing on your cigar and rehumidifying it that way?
What? Oh my gosh. I don't know why this was on the internet, but I had to share because one, I want people to know not to do it, but they actually have instructions on how to follow up through with this whole process.
I don't even want to go over it.
You don't want to go over it? You want to just skip it? We're just good.
Listen. I just want to throw this scenario out there, and then you can decide if you want to go over it. Because I honestly, it just makes me want to puke. You go in there, and your cigar box lid is open, right? So your cigars are exposed. And let's say you have company over at the house, and you're like, that cigar box will really impress my company. And let's just say you had burritos for dinner, and they go and take a shit. You're getting shit particles up in the air landing on your cigars trying to rehumidify. No! No!
Oh, Austin.
Nice.
All right.
Could you?
That's valid. But it says keep it in a cabinet or something, right? And only.
But then it says if you prefer, you could store the box of cigars out in the open.
Because it's eye-catching and decorative piece.
Yeah, until the shit particles land on it.
Until you're like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah. No. Fuck. God. Night. No. Don't do this. I don't even want to go over it because somebody's gonna do it. And they're like, Leadership of the Leaf told me this is the best. No.
Dog rockets.
Fuck. So right. Bad.
Fine.
Ugh.
So, all right. What is your first third, sir?
Good night. Not shit particles, I can tell you that.
Well, good.
Gross. Chocolate coffee.
All right. I got creaminess and sweet leather.
Nice. I think that's what pretty similar to what I had.
I'm also got smoked cherry wood in my Hennessy, so. All right. So, let's go over the next one then. All right. So, skipping the shower. Be careful not to overhydrate. Oh. You can find a suitable humid environment to store your cigars. Store the cigar somewhere with abundant natural moisture in the atmosphere. Damp and humid places like cellars and greenhouses make ideal environments for exposing dried out cigars to constant steady levels of humidity. Be sure the place you choose is room temperature or slightly warmer or cooler. Never leave cigars in places that receive direct sunlight or near any kind of heat source.
So I'm not upset at this one. Greenhouses, I think, would be a little bit too warm. But like a cellar or something is not going to be a bad thing. They are naturally damp. We talked about this at the beginning. Don't just like take your cigar and wrap a damp paper towel around it and be like, rehydrating my cigar. It doesn't work.
Right.
So I'm okay with like a cellar or a basement or something that's a little bit more damp and moist down there. As long as I would argue that you need a hygrometer down there near your cigar so you can follow how much moisture it's actually getting. Because if you go down there and your hygrometer reads 86%, no, I don't. I think I'd take it out of there and I'd go place it in a more controlled environment. Yeah. So if you do this and you leave it out, like throughout the summer here, it was a constant 68% humidity in my house. I had no problems leaving cigars out on my counter for a couple days because I was like, it's 68 degrees. They're not drying out. It's fine.
Yeah,
I didn't leave them near the stove or anything, but I was okay with doing that because I was monitoring the humidity in my house. I had a hygrometer out on the counter and it stayed at 68%. I was like, this is perfect. I don't care.
Right. Some people are lucky like that.
Yeah. You, on the other hand, are lucky to get up to like 40% humidity.
Yeah. Oof. So if you was to put them in like a cellar or something, you leave the cigars inside the box. I would leave the lid open pretty much a little bit, crack open to remove the lid of the cigar box and make sure the cigars are evenly, spread about. Leaving the top of the box open will allow moisture more easily to infiltrate the box and penetrate through the tobacco inside the cigars. If they aren't completely dried out, leaving the lid propped open will have ample allowing moisture to enter the box. Thoroughly dehydrated cigars, you probably want to go ahead and just take that lid all the way off.
Yeah, so again, hygrometer is key. You have to measure this. It's not something, like I said, you don't just throw the cigar at 86% humidity and go, yep, that'll do in a couple days and I'll be good to go. It doesn't work that way. It's going to take a lot of time. And the more humidity it's exposed to on the outside, the soggier is going to become while leaving a dry husk on the inside. So even if you do it that way, you got to, again, measure it. And then you have to make sure once you remove it from that moist environment, put it in a humidor for at least a couple weeks to let it kind of even out inside and outside. Some people say a warm, damp towel could be folded and placed underneath the stored cigar box, not the cigars. I don't like it. If you're already storing them in a humid environment, they don't need extra humidity. You just need extra time.
Yeah.
Because that's it's going to cause mildew.
Yeah, I think that's one of those like old school like methods. Like the not the modern times. Like in modern times, we have different HVAC systems and all kinds of different things. But I could see that like in like Chicago in 1902 or some shit, right?
Yeah, right, yeah. So the other thing is too is if you're leaving them in a humidor, I would caution against overfilling that humidor. Because if you're leaving a dehydrated cigar in a humidor with a bunch of other perfectly humidified cigars, you could just leave it in there for a longer time and it'll eventually come up straight and be okay. But if you're trying to, I don't want to say rapidly rehydrate it, but you're trying to do it a little bit quicker of a process, a little bit more controlled, I would not leave a bunch of extra cigars just sitting inside this this box. Like I would leave only the ones that are severely dried out and go through this process with them and then keep them spread out. Because once you leave them in there, you want to leave them set up for a month or so. You got to make sure they're not going to be knocked over, become wet, or exposed to direct heat or cold. And you're going to take the longest time, but it's the best way to rehydrate cigars. You have to also rotate them. We talked about, rotating like a hot dog on a cooker. Well, guess what? If you have multiple and they're stacked on top of each other, you need to take the bottom and shove it to the top, the top to the bottom, and take the middle and shuffle it around. You got to keep it all moved around.
That's good anyway, because then you can check for mold and you can check your progress. I mean, it's better that way anyway, until you get up to your point where you feel like they are at a level to where you can set it and forget it.
Yeah. And sometimes, if your house is like, it's in the middle of the desert, you keep the AC off or something, find the coolest place in your house, which is probably going to be a dark closet somewhere, and store them down in the bottom of the dark closet so it keeps it as warm as you can. But, overhydration, is, I don't want to say it's irreversible, but it's going to deaden that cigar's flavor. It's going to make it difficult to keep lit and can cause mold to grow on the tobacco. So once you get it up to a certain point, like let's say you get it up to 60% humidified, if you have one of those fancy cigar humidification checkers, once you do that, and let's say you get it 60%, just put it in your humidor and leave it alone. It'll come up naturally over the next couple weeks.
All right. Well, there's another method, which I think, again, is an old school method that's kind of more modern than the previous one, because it's talking about Ziploc bags. So you want to poke holes in a large Ziploc bag and place the cigar box inside that. It has to be spacious enough to fit the entire box inside. Poke holes in both sides of the bag to ventilate it, and insert the box inside, and then seal it. Of course, you want to get the appropriate size bag for the appropriate size cigar box. Don't make the holes too large, as the cigars may become oversaturated as they sit. A paperclip or the point of a knife would probably do the trick just for making small holes. Perforated. Perforated? Is that how
yes.
you say that?
Yes, perforated.
Not perforated?
Not perforated. And then once you do that, you want to slide the ventilated bag containing the open cigar box into a second bag containing a sponge, a damp sponge dampened with
vodka,
distilled water.
Oh, so close.
So close. This will allow the sponge to slowly diffuse its moisture in through the ventilated bag and into the dry cigars. Rehydration with this method is, they say it takes a week. Again, it's going to take longer than this. If you expose it to a high level of humidification, that's okay. You think it's going to speed it up? It's not. The slowest method is the best. Because once you got to be cautious to make sure you don't let the cigars become wet.
But you were saying about the sponge. Every now and again, like you said, you want to rotate cigars anyway. You want to check that sponge and re-wet it as necessary every couple of days. Typically, it should be okay. But while you're rotating the cigars, you might as well go ahead and check the sponge while you're at it.
Yeah. So the best way to not have this issue is store them in a humidor because they use special humidification devices and have a hygrometer in there to regulate the humidity and be able for you to check it. And then keeping them at the optimal level to preserve the flavor, texture, and smoothness of the tobacco is the best. A cigar that has been rehydrated will not ever regain its original quality. It can still provide a good smoke if you're patient enough and take the right steps. Slower rehydration methods require you to wait longer, but are the absolute best method for bringing dry cigars back to life. Again, we told you, you're in for a project.
Right. And I think that's what we was about to go over. So we was talking about the two-way humidification packs, right? The Bevita. When I talk about Bevita, that's what I'm talking about. So the best way, which in my opinion is probably you'll agree, is to get, I would say, an old cigar box, not necessarily your humidor because you don't want to intermingle. Take a very low humidity pack from Bevita, like maybe 60, 62.
62 is where they start, I think.
And then wait a little bit, maybe a week, 2 weeks. Then change it out to 65. Then gradually pretty much let it grow up to like a 70 or to where your preference is.
Yeah. And I would say, I would honestly say throw it in there with some Bevita packs and then every week check the Bevita packs and I would leave it there for like a month and then go, okay, cool, it's been a month. Change out those Bevita packs to the 65. Again, check it every week and then let it sit for like probably about another month. And then just check your springiness of your tobacco every week or so. And then I would let it sit after that 2 months. I'd let it sit there and then check your humidification of your tobacco and go from there and say, okay, hey, this is good or hey, no, this is bad. I wouldn't go higher than a 69 though.
Yeah. So when can't you rehydrate a cigar?
Well, before we get into that, I want to get into a couple warnings real quick.
Okay.
So I want to make sure everyone understands because this is of the utmost importance. Do not smoke a cigar if it has accidentally become overhydrated or you suspect that mold has set up in the tobacco. That will cause you to be sick. If you don't rotate your cigars, and we're talking top to bottom and a quarter turn at a time for a week, regular intervals, it's going to result in one side of the tobacco being drier than the other. Like setting a steak on a burner and then closing the lid on the grill and going, I'll see that in 30 minutes. You're going to have a really charred side and probably a pretty solid side. Probably a pretty good cook side. So that's going to cause you to have trouble keeping the cigar lit and cause it to drag or puff poorly. So I wanted to go over those really quick because this whole process is about slow methodical steps.
Yeah.
And it just takes time. But, all right, when you cannot rehydrate a cigar, if your wrapper is damaged or cracked, I would not recommend you rehydrating that cigar.
Yeah, it's pretty much dead.
Yeah. It's just not going to work that well. Or if the cigar has become so dry that all the oils have evaporated from the tobacco.
Yeah, that's no brainer. That you can rehydrate by because of the moisture and everything, but you can't put the oils back in the tobacco.
Yeah. And that's going to cause very muted flavor. You can rehydrate it. You can smoke it, but you're not going to have hardly any flavor. It's just smoke for smoke's sake.
Yeah. Almost like figuring out what your second third is.
Ooh. So that, you know what? That's... I would say... Sorry, that deserved a second puff. There's a little bit of spice, but it's muted by a creaminess. Like a malt, almost. Mm. It's definitely not bad. It's just... Spices, black pepper, almonds. That's what it is. Almonds.
Ah.
Getting all right. Okay, there it is. That made me. I was like, there's something about this that's like not quite nutty, but nutty. Almonds.
I'm getting like a creamy cedar, which is kind of weird, but a creaminess with a cedar. And I want to say citrus, but the citrus could be coming from my drink. But I'm gonna throw that note in there because that's what I'm pairing it with, and that's the flavor notes I'm getting.
Fair enough. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about how to develop managers into leaders.
Yeah. All right. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to Leadership of the Leaf. I'm just letting you know, if you want to see what kind of cigars that myself, Dice,
and Austin,
what we're smoking on each episode, check out our Instagram on Leadership of the Leaf. All one word.
@ Leadership of the Leaf. And please, leave us a comment. Send us a message with whatever questions or what you guys are smoking on. Maybe you guys have some suggestions for us that we'd love to give it a shot.
@ Leadership of the Leaf on Instagram.
Check me out, guys, on Instagram @ Flavor King with 2 G's on there. And it's been a pleasure listening to Leadership of the Leaf here with Dice and Austin.
All right, welcome back, everyone, from that short little break we had. And now that we finished talking about rehydrating a cigar, I want to talk about developing a manager into a leader.
You're such a good manager, Dice.
Yeah, I manage things, not people.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
We've been over this topic a little bit, but I kind of wanted to delve into the actual manager, into a leadership side of things. So that's why this topic came up.
Yeah. I think the terms manager and leader are usually used interchangeably, and I think that's incorrect. Every manager is not a leader, and every leader is not a manager. They have two completely different roles, but they do go hand in hand. They play distinct roles within an organization, and while there can be some overlap, there are fundamental differences between the two.
Some of the differences between the two, which we've discussed before, is the focus on the task versus the vision. Managers are primarily task-oriented. You know, they manage things. They focus on planning, organizing, controlling resources to achieve specific short-term goals, ensure the day-to-day operations run smoothly, with an emphasis on efficiency and effectiveness in achieving objectives.
Whereas leaders are more vision-oriented, they inspire and motivate their teams by setting a long-term vision, creating a sense of purpose, and guiding individuals toward a shared goal. They're often willing to take risks and explore new opportunities to drive innovation and change. So it's again, people versus processes, or people versus things, right? Managers focus on the task, the things, the operations, producing widgets.
Yeah, it makes me think of, let's look at an organization of, this is probably stupid. Look at an organization of like McDonald's, right? So okay. You got the guy that's running, the managing at McDonald's, yep. Like making sure the Happy Meals are made perfectly the same every single time, as opposed to the owner,
the leader
of McDonald's. Yeah, the leader. And now he has a vision, and now there's like, what, 80 billion McDonald's across every fucking country, county.
Continent.
Yeah, so he had the vision to open up multiple McDonald's, whereas the managers are managing each one of those McDonald's to make sure that everything is exactly the same, no matter which McDonald's you go to.
Right, well, except for in different countries, because the ones in Germany serve beer.
And the one in Japan serves fish.
Yes. Anyways.
Fish.
So there's also a difference between authority and influence. So managers typically derive their authority from their position within the organizational hierarchy. They have formal power, and their influence is based on the role and responsibilities assigned to them. They also have coercive power, meaning they can punish and be punitive in nature if necessary. And that's, you know, fear me, do what I say, otherwise I'm gonna dock your pay or whatever the case is.
Leaders may or may not have formal authority. Their influence is derived from personal qualities such as charisma, expertise, and trust. And respect they earn from their followers. Leadership is more about influence and the ability to inspire others to follow willingly instead of saying, you will do this or I will write your ass up.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like the line of, they may or may not have formal authority, because to be a leader does not mean that you have to be in a leadership position. It sounds cliche or whatever to say, oh, anybody could be a leader, but it's true. Like, you know, even the person that is the lowest person, if they have that charisma and the you know, they've make some sound decisions and stuff, people are willing to follow them, whether or not, you know, they may or may not have that formal authority. But it's just one of those things where you gotta decipher that for yourself. Another difference is short-term versus long-term perspective. Usually, managers are often more concerned with short-term, immediate goals. They focus on maintaining stability, solving day-to-day problems, and meeting specific targets and deadlines, right? You gotta produce this many widgets. This many widgets is your quota, and you will produce this many widgets, or I'm gonna write you up. Or, hey guys, you know, we have to get X, Y, and Z done by today, otherwise we're behind our deadline and that's just not gonna be okay.
Right. Where leaders take a long-term view, focusing on the big picture and organization's future. They are more inclined to adapt to change and create strategic direction for the organizations. Leaders consider the long-term impact of their decisions on organizational growth and sustainability. So they're not looking at just how many widgets we can produce that day. They're looking at how many widgets is possible that we can produce for that month, for that year, for that quarter, for that fiscal year.
How do we grow? How do we be better? I get that you can produce 60 widgets a week. I want to grow that number to 72. What if we change the process to this, this, and this? Would that get us to 72? No, that'll get us to 70. Okay, that's closer to the goal. But, you know, I'm not telling you that's your quota, but let's try doing it this way and see if we just start exceeding our quota. You know, they're focused on changing that prospect, that process, and getting to the overall vision for the organization or the business. Usually in practice, individuals in leadership roles may need to exhibit both managerial and leadership qualities to be effective. The key is understanding when to be a manager, for example, operational tasks and routine activities, and when to be a leader for setting a compelling vision, fostering innovation, and guiding organizational change. When management and leadership are balanced within one individual or even just between two individuals, they are complementary and can help the bottom line of any organization grow. even if you have leaders, right? You can have the most visionary leader imaginable, right? I look at Tesla, right? Elon Musk. He has this great vision. He is not that great of a manager.
No.
Right? He has a great vision, but if you tell him to manage the day-to-day tasks, he's going to grow very bored very quickly and not lose interest immediately and think about 16 other things that he could be doing instead. As a leader, as a visionary, he's got it. He's got that in spades. As a manager, he's not that great of a manager from what I hear from all the articles I read.
I know someone that worked at SpaceX, and they pretty much said the same thing. Like, money was just being poured, and, oh, you need that? Buy it. Oh, you need that? Buy it. He was like, it was just mismanaged in that aspect of, like, they bought something, and they already have, like, three of the same thing. But because no one was paying attention to where stuff was, it was like, oh, I need that, and then they just bought it.
Yeah. And that's going to lose money on the bottom line. That's why Tesla took forever to become profitable. That's probably why SpaceX took forever to become profitable. You know, not great management, but great leadership.
Well, to develop management to a leadership role, there's like five. We narrowed it down. We narrowed it down to like five steps. Now, this is written in gold. And it's all on practice, because leadership takes practice. All right, difference between manager and leaders. Great managers are critical to business success. They provide all the tools and training needed for employees to be productive, to be successful in the hands of their employees. By definition, a manager has juniors in positions of authority within the company, and they monitor and track progress and focus systems and structures.
Yeah, so like what you were just saying, right? Like Tesla or SpaceX, you know, oh, you need this? Buy it. Why? We already have three of them. Well, I don't see them, so they must be not, you know, they must be in use. I must need another one. No, they're sitting over there in a fucking warehouse.
Right.
We bought them and pre-positioned them, and then nobody fucking went and got them. Oh, all right, well, we just bought another one. That's wasteful. A leader could be anyone on the team who steps up to inspire and motivate. A leader focuses on encouraging teamwork and commitment to the end goal. A great leader makes everyone on the team feel empowered and encourages the team to learn and grow. Influence and mentorship set leaders apart from managers. It's great. Hey, you know, if you have all of the, and we just talked about all the differences, right? So this is nothing new. But you can have a manager that sits there and is a great manager of all your stuff, but if you're not setting your people up for success, you're not leading them, you're not making them grow, you're not making them better people, better producers, better employees, that's all you are as a manager. And the first step is recognizing that there's a difference between managers and leaders, right? Just like the first step in solving any problem is recognizing there's a fucking problem.
Right. Hi, Austin. I'm an alcoholic.
No, I was tested.
Management is doing things right. Leadership is doing the right things. That quote is by Peter Drucker.
Who is Peter Drucker?
Who the fuck is Peter Drucker? Peter Drucker was an Australian-American management consultant, educator, and author whose writings contributed to the philosophy and practical foundations of modern management theory. He is known as the father of management thinking. So someone that is a philosophy and all that about management thinking is saying leadership is doing the right things, whereas management is doing things right. So with what we just discussed previously, if you put those together, that's what you need. You need the manager that's doing the right things with a leader that's doing things right. So if you combine those both, I counted how many widgets we need to make, visionize that we need to make more within the same amount of time. That's what he is saying. And I like that because he is a management guy through and through, but yet he still uses the word leadership.
Yeah, no, I agree. I 100% agree with that quote, and I think it's a great one. So step number two is going to require a shift in mindset. The basic mindset of a manager is different than that of a leader. Some people believe that leaders are born and they distinctively lead. It's part of who they are. And to a certain degree, I think that's true, but it's completely possible to develop a manager into a leader when given the right tools. The biggest tools to understand the mindset differences and how to give your managers the tools to develop into a leader. Just because somebody, you know, people are like, oh, you know, this guy, he's just a born leader, right? That kid is, he's just a born leader. He's going to do great things in life. He's a born leader. All right, fine. Yeah, that's natural ability of leadership. That maybe that comes naturally to some people. You know, they have that charisma. They have that whatever, that X factor that makes them a leader, that makes people want to follow them. But that's not to say that nobody else can become a leader.
I look at it in this way. Managers are like bricklayers and leaders are like architects. Think of managers as people who are really good at organizing things and following rules to get the job done, to make sure everything runs smoothly right now. But on the other hand, leaders are architects. They're more interested in creating big plans for the future. They use the skills of managers to help their team see a bigger picture and work towards a long-term goal, not just an everyday task. Have managers to take their eyes off the bottom line and focus on the horizon. A leader's mindset does this on a daily basis.
It's one of those things where you have to teach people, take a step back. Don't get lost. Don't fail to see the forest because of the trees. You know, you got to take a step back. And sometimes changing your perspective is going to be a good thing. And literally, you know, I was reading a book about Grant, and you know, he was known as a great leader in the Civil War, but he always would sit there and go, "Show me the entire landscape of the battlefield. I don't want to look at any map until I see the landscape, so I can get a visual of it in my head." And then he would go and he'd look at the, okay, I get it. There's a hill here. Okay, there's a ravine here. All right, there's the river that we were looking at. Okay, boom, 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 okay. And he would look at everything and go, all right, this is what we need to do and here's how we need to move. And I think we can actually cross right here and this will be good. But if he just looked at the map, right, and tried to manage individual battalions, he would lose the battle because he didn't take the whole picture and he'd say, all right, this place charge, and that river on the map says it's uncrossable, so all right, it's uncrossable, so they have to go over here. But when he took a look at the landscape and got a whole picture of everything, and he was able to see the entire picture of the landscape and the battlefield, he was able to devise different strategies than his other generals had before he got there. It was a change in perspective that made him such a great leader. He could sit there and look at maps of what the generals were saying, like, hey, I'm at this place and da da da. And he'd be like, all right, cool. And he looks at a map, he goes, I get what he's saying. I need to see it for myself. I need to do this. And I got to look at the horizon and look at everything before I can actually do anything.
Right. I can picture like a junior officer or something working under him and just like scratching the head. Like, I don't know why he's doing this. All we need to do is take this battalion and go here. Just take this battalion and go here. Take over this town or whatever. We'll be good to go.
Yeah. And that's a manager's mindset.
Correct.
Whereas he had a leader's mindset and said, okay, we can't take that because on this map it doesn't look that bad, but that is a huge fortification with 16 guns pointed this way and everything else. Let's go around the other side. What does that look like? Well, on the map, it looks impassable, but that looks like the easiest route I've ever seen in my life, and they're basically leaving the back door open for us. All right, under the cover of night, we're going to go around the side, and we're going to go in the back door. And boom, they take it over, and they go, whoa, look at that. That was easy.
Yeah.
So it's that shift in perspective, that shift in mindset, and you know, and I'm sure the junior officers under him would sit there and go, man, I never would have considered that. I didn't even think about it like that. And he's over here like, and that's why you lose. Because that's the kind of person Grant was.
Your Grant description, everything you was talking about is perfect for number three because it provides inspiration.
Yeah.
A manager plans details while a leader sets the direction. So I can see a junior officer like, we can take over this town, we can do that for this very specific purpose. And whereas Grant being the leader be like, yeah, you could take over that town, but we want to win this, so we need to take over more than just that town.
Right.
I mean, I didn't say it as elaborate as you did, but you get the idea.
Well, yeah. There was an instance, I don't remember which major city it was, but it was under siege forever, and Grant finally showed up, and he got off the train, and before he even went to his command center to hear the general's plans, their ideas of how to take over this city, he was like, don't care about that, take me to the battlefield, I want to see what we're up against. And he would go, and then everyone's like, why? And he goes, nope, I don't care about that, I get what you're trying to say, I want to see it so I can better understand it. And one, he did that twofold, because all the enlisted folk that were in the trenches would see General Grant going, okay, all right, I see what you guys are up against, and I'm not going to waste lives needlessly. Let's find a different route in, because what we've been doing obviously hadn't been working. So the goal is to make the shift from a transactional interactions, buying something from a store, minimal emotion, to a transformational interaction, lasting impact, like a motivational speech. Hell, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address. Yeah. We still study that bitch today. Martin Luther King's Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. Holy shit. Talk about a motivational speech.
Right.
That relinquishment of control can be hard for managers who are rigid in their habits. In order to inspire your managers, provide them with training. Right? A manager could sit there and go, guys, I need you to do X, Y, Z. Get X done, then Y done, then Z done. A leader's going to come in and say, guys, I don't care if we get A through Z done. I want you guys to be safe. I want you guys to do this. And then I know that you're going to go out there and produce, and they're going to make all these great grand speeches, and all these people go, yeah, hell yeah. And the next thing you know, they've got the, you know, they're done with X, Y, and Z, and they're on to triple D or whatever the case is. Yeah. Bitch, what?
Yeah. there are several key indicators that indicate whether or not a person will lead a team or simply manage. One thing I do pay attention to, and this is great to say out loud, the leadership vocabulary is different when talking about leadership. Words like cultivate, mentorship, and build, those are great words. Like, you don't use like the here and now. You want to use words that's going to motivate for future use.
Right.
I want to build a team around this. I want to motivate everyone to achieve more. I want to cultivate a culture of excellence.
Right. You look at NBA teams, NFL teams, right? What do they always say? Oh, this is a guy they can build a team around.
Correct.
This is a guy, that guy, he comes in and he just brings in with him a culture, and he cultivates a culture of respect and teamwork and dignity for everybody. And that's what makes him a great leader, right? They're using those words for the future and saying, hey, that guy out there, he's mentoring those younger players and he's making a lasting impact to those players. And that's what good leaders do. Good leaders make plans for the future. Another thing they do is they don't let their ego rule. They never fail to give credit where credit is due. Look at any sort of good leader and they're going to go, I didn't get this done. Hey, look at a military leader. Hey, General Mathis, you great job on doing this. And he goes, I didn't do anything. That was all of my grunts doing the hard work. I just came up with a plan. They executed it. Any head coach would tell you the same thing. Hey, my guys, they were able to follow the plan and they executed it and it went out great. And then they were able to have the freedom to change the plan when they needed to. And that's what got us this win. Boom, they gave credit out. Nope, wasn't me. It was the guys. It was It was my guy. It was my people. They made this happen.
The next is leverage talent. A manager assigns tasks while a leader works collaboratively to reach an end goal. Yeah, I said the word.
I'm amazed.
Part of leadership is learning to leverage talent and skills, looking at each goal individually and then leveraging whose strengths will be best suited to complete the task. Now, this is something we've actually been part of when we had to build widgets. There were certain people that was better at different parts of the widget building. And when we need to get the job done because shit hit the fan, I would go out and be like, Austin, pick your best team for this. And then that's when you would get, this guy was good at that, this other guy was good at that, and that girl can do this, and here's my team. And I would like, execute. And then boom, the task was done. Everybody was happy. Nobody worked the weekend, and we high-fived and had beers and cigars.
Yeah. Part of leadership is learning to leverage the talents and skills of your employees, looking at each goal individually and then leveraging whose strengths will be best suited to complete the task. A manager will delegate the tasks, when a leader will create teams of people whose strengths and weaknesses balance each other and to have a peak performance, usually exceeding the end goal. Exactly like you just said. It's required. It's a skill, though.
You know, it is.
You laugh because you're like, oh, I just said that. Yes, you did. But here's the kicker: is you can have a manager, and he goes, Billy, you do this. Susie, you do that. Tommy, you do this, and go. And they're gonna be like, all right, cool. And Billy really wants to do what Tommy's doing, and Tommy wants to do what Susie's doing, and Susie's wanting to do what Billy's doing. And that would have made it a whole lot better and more productive, and it would have got done in half the time. The problem is you have to balance those weaknesses. Now, I'm not saying you keep those people in those certain tasks all the time, because everybody needs to grow. But if you're trying to get the job done in the here and now, hey, we got a job to do. The job is now. It's crunch time. You put the best people in the best positions to succeed. Period. Dot. It absolutely is required. I don't know how many times when I was a manager producing widgets, and I would get a task, hey, do X, Y, and Z. And this was after I was working for you. Hey, I need you to get to this line in the sand. Got it, boss. I'll make it happen. And he goes, and I want so-and-so doing this. And I'm like, nope, I'm not going to have them do that because they are sucky at that job. Well, I want you to do it. Okay, we'll get there, but it's going to take us an extra 2 hours to get there because you want that one person doing this job. My bosses would go, well, who do you think should do it? This person? He sucks at everything except for that one task. I don't give a shit. He can suck at breathing oxygen, but he's great at that one task. Let me put him there, and I promise you it'll turn out the way you want it to. All right, I'm going to trust you. Boom. To sign the tasks. We get it done in half the time than the leader or the manager or my supervisor, whoever it was, thought we would. I didn't believe it. I told you he sucks at breathing oxygen, but that motherfucker could do that one task till the day he dies and he would be content. And he's great at that job.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead, sir.
I was going to say, leaders understand people do more for recognition than other forms of reward. So a big component of leadership is learning to seek out experts in a task and giving them the credit for it. As just as you're saying, fucking Jimmy fucking Slackoff guy, he does widget A the best ever in the world. Everything else sucks, but widget A, that's your guy. So you gave him mad credit. Now your supervisor looks at that guy a little different.
Yeah.
Now, because before he was like, this guy's a jackass. Now he's like, well, he's a jackass, but he can do that, motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, I didn't think he could do that job. I'm telling you, that dude can do that job till the cows come home, and he will kill everybody at doing that job. He is the fastest. So leaders have to learn how to relate to a wide variety of personalities and build relationships that are mutually beneficial. You can't, I don't want to say you can't, it's not very a good idea to sit there and be like, I hate that motherfucker. That motherfucker sucks. Because once you do, you're immediately going to sit there and see that person as just a sucky piece of shit and you never want to deal anything with him. But leveraging relationships isn't putting the work off for others, as management can often feel. Leadership is working collaboratively to reach an end goal, leaving all those involved feeling fulfilled. You did this to me when I was coming and you're trying to teach me how to be a leader. You gave me one of the suckiest people in the entire shop and I hated you for it. And you're like, nope, you got to use him. Figure out a way to use him. And I found out the best way to use him. And I was like, this dude sucks at everything except for looking at parts. He can clean and look at parts like a motherfucker. That's your job, bitch. You're going to clean and look at parts. And I wasn't the nicest to the person. And I kind of regret that aspect, but man, could that dude do it? And he would do it well. And I never had a single problem. I never questioned his work after a couple times where he was like, hey, this is bad. I'm like, no, it's not. Where's the bad at? And he's like, right here. See this part right here? It's broken. I'm like, holy shit, I missed that. And he's like, told you. I'm like, all right, I got to look at you a little bit differently. You're actually pretty good at this thing. So it requires you, you know, I could sit there and talk to people for hours and hours and hours. And I, you know, people sit there and be like, man, Ned, Austin, he's so cool. He does, you know, he actually talks to you like a human being, da, da, da. And then another guy will come in and he doesn't talk to people that way. And he just is a jackass and nobody wants to work for him. I had that same problem. I've talked about it before. I came in to a different shift as the leader and they're like, You're on this shift right now? And I'm like, yeah, I got put here for the minimal time that this dude's on leave. And they're like, oh, thank God. I can't wait to work for you. You were so awesome because they all knew me. They knew my style of leadership. And they knew that I had a line in the sand. It wasn't an unreachable line in the sand, but I didn't slack them off. I didn't let them slack off either. But I would talk to them. Hey, what do you guys think? Do you think we can get this, this, and this done? They're like, that's a tall task, but I think we can do it. And I'm like, cool, let's go forth and conquer then. I would take their opinions into consideration. It was one of those things, like I just built a relationship with all my workers and they loved me for it.
Yeah, I remember there was a time where I got switched to a different shift and it was damn near mutiny from the other shift. Like, I want to go to the same shift he is.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that.
I'm like, sorry.
Yeah.
You made me think of the kid. I call him a kid. I remember telling you got to utilize the tools provided.
Yeah,
Austin, utilize the tools provided.
And I flipped you off so many times for saying that to me.
Top leaders will take assignments and streamline the process, which could be considered a managerial tactic.
It can, but. They do so in a way where the people don't feel like they're just being used. They feel like they're being used to the best of their abilities and they actually feel like they're contributing to the team. And I think that's the difference, right? They streamline the process and the assignments and it uses everybody to the best of their ability. So everybody is left feeling like, without me, that shit would have failed. Hell yeah, I'm an important part of this team. And meanwhile, your leader's over there going, holy shit, I found something this dude's good at.
Well, that goes to number five. Trust the team.
Nah, I don't want to trust nobody.
Well, I mean, previously we talked about the manager that's rigid and hard-nosed and all that stuff. Like, my way, this way, 1, 2, 3, do it this way. I mean, trust the team. Many managers are either old school. I'm just saying that. Many managers are old school, do it my way type, or new school where nobody is ever wrong type. And I guess I'm more of an old school. The old school type wears himself out trying to oversee every single detail from the start to finish and displays little to no trust to the team he most likely hired.
Those are called micromanagers and they're dicks.
Yeah, but I have an old school feel or process to a lot of things I do.
Listen, there's a hear me out. There's a difference between an old school manager who says, "Hey, what's the status of this? Okay, cool, go forth and conquer," versus the micromanager who asks every 5 minutes, "Is it done yet? Is 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 it done yet? Why aren't you done? I would have had this done already." Blah, 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 blah. There's a difference between that and the old school type leadership that says, "Hey, I need to know what this update is because I gotta type up a report that needs to be done in 30 minutes and I have four other sections to go talk to. What's your status?" "Oh, my status is X, Y, and Z." "Cool. If anything changes between now and then as significant, come talk to me." "All right, sure thing, boss." Versus the micromanager who runs around between five teams going, "Is it done yet? Is it done yet? Is it done yet? Is it done yet? Why aren't you done? Why aren't you done? Why aren't you done?" Versus the new school who go, "Hey, how are you feeling about this assignment? Are you sure? Are you happy? Because I can move you to a different section, but I really want to make sure you're the best for the task. I really want to make sure that you're okay." Because the new school spends too much time trying to appease a variety of people with different notions on the same project. "Oh, well, yeah, that's a good idea. We could do it that way. Yeah, that's a good idea." Meanwhile, Susie's going, "You just agreed to my way 6 minutes ago. Why the fuck are we changing it now? Pick a direction and we'll go, but you need to pick a damn direction."
Well, either old school, new school, whatever direction you go, that manager is, should I say, both are exhausting to the average employee, and projects end up taking too long, running over budget, or not meeting quality standards. And just as you were saying, the new school, the project's more than likely it's not going to get done on time. And the old school, the project's probably not going to get done on time.
And that's usually because the employees are so burnt out from answering damn 20 questions that they just stop working. I was talking with a boss of mine, actually, and he was telling me a story about when he was a manager of a group of people. And they had a problem, and he goes, "Hey, this power wire is broken. And so I have to replace the power wire on this component. The component's not bad, but we discovered the power wire is broken." And his boss goes, "Okay. And the power wire is important because it provides power to the part, right?" And he goes, "Yep." And his leader goes, "Okay. And what color was the wire?" He goes, "What the fuck does that matter? The power wire is broke. It could be green for all I give a shit. That's broken. I'll replace it with a purple one. Why the fuck is that important?" What? And that's the sort of thing that micromanaging does, right? Because, well, we got to make sure that we use the same color wire. Bitch, it's copper. It's a power. It's a wire. It's a copper wire that has a wax sheath on it. What do you want from me? A leader's going to give the team direction. Go replace the wire. I'm going to trust that you can handle the task at hand without me micromanaging. Come tell me when it's done. There's a delicate between balance here between where the team knows the leader's available for help while the manager can't help but micromanage every step of the way. "Hey, what color is that wire?" "Oh, it's purple and you're replacing it with a green one. Are you sure that's okay? Can we do that? Is that allowed? I need you to research this for me. Can we replace a purple wire with a green wire? Is that allowed?" "Holy shit, it doesn't matter."
"Take a picture of the wire so I can see the color of it, because I'm not sure if you were saying the right color."
Fuck. Go away. I gotta tell the boss that the wire's broken and he's gonna ask me what color it is. No, he's not gonna ask you what color it is. He's gonna go, "Is it replaced yet? Do I have a serviceable widget?" "No, then why the fuck are you here?"
A great leader trusts the team and inspires them to exceed expectations and step up when and where needed. The leader understands they can be available to the team throughout the whole process without being overbearing. Just like you said, "I need you to change the wire." "Well, what color you want me to use?" "I don't give a fuck. Change the wire.
Get the wire fixed, man. If you need help, come find me and I'll help you out." I did that so many times. "Hey boss, we're having this problem connecting this part to a different part. All right, let me assess the situation. I got to figure out what the hell you're doing wrong."
Some of my favorite words, sir.
"Oh, I see what you're doing wrong. Okay, here, why don't we do this? Hey, get down here and help me. boom, I bench pressed the part into the position while with another dude because they said, oh, we can't make it work. Have you tried lifting it? Well, yeah, but it's swinging. It's getting cockeyed in there. Okay, have you tried pushing on it from the bottom to get it into position while another person gets the bolt in place? Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Get down here and help me bench press this motherfucker into position. You two, when we're going to bench press it, you're going to fucking put the bolt in place. Let us know when it's done. All right, sure thing, boss. Bench press 5 minutes later. Hey, it's in. Hey, thanks, boss. We really appreciate the help. No problem. I'm going to go back inside. Let me know when it's done. Can do. Boom. Not overbearing. You help them solve a problem. Go forth and conquer.
Oh, that's amazing because excellence in leadership requires being actively hands-on from the beginning to the end. So they needed you. You came out. You helped them. And you went back to doing what you was doing.
Yeah. I have my own work to complete. I don't need to complete yours. I trust you to complete it. Go forth and conquer. Let me know when it's done, and I'll come inspect the work.
And that points out to, like, a manager would normally, like, delegate like that, but leadership goes beyond that delegation.
Yeah. You can delegate the work, but maybe you didn't delegate it to the right people. If I have a person who's great at widget B, and I say, hey, I'm going to delegate you widget A, and the dude has no idea how to produce widget A, you just fucked your entire process.
Yeah.
So the process of evolving into a leader is more natural for some. For others, it takes constant work and mindfulness of how their actions affect the team. It comes down to personality, in a sense, I would say. Because certain people have that personality for being a leader, right? They have that personality of, I'm trusting you because you were hired to do this job. I'm going to trust that you can do the job, and I'm going to help when I can. Other people just can't help but not trust people because the only way to do something right is
my way.
To do it yourself.
No, do it my way. Immediately.
Yep.
Stop what you're doing and do it my way.
But this way is working. Why can't I do it this way?
Because that's not what protocol says. You should do it my way. Only my way.
But this way works.
Ah, just move and let me do it.
This isn't my first rodeo.
You had people like that before. Yeah. The five steps that we went over can help anyone transition to that leadership role. By all means, like you were saying earlier, it does take practice, and it's not going to come like naturally to everyone. Soon the team will notice the change in that manager, and they will begin to follow that lead. But if you like get stuck back in your ways, then you're going to alienate your team, and then it's just, you got to start over again.
Yeah. Well, and if you flip-flop too many times, your team's going to lose trust in you. They're going to be like, yeah, this guy does good for a little bit, and then he just reverts back to his old ways, and it's just fucking bullshit anyways. I'm going to move on to greener pastures.
Yeah, this guy's full of shit.
Yeah. So make sure to take this role carefully and with the greatest intention to serve the team before serving yourself. The idea is to prioritize playing for the name on the front of the jersey rather than the name on the back, right? Go to any NBA, NFL, NHL, NBA team, right? The team name is on the front, right? You have the Astros, the Rangers, the Diamondbacks, the Sharks, the fucking, the Panthers, the Jets, the Thunder, the Nets, the Rockets, right? They all have the name on the front. And then they have their name on the back, right? Because when they look down, what do they see? They see the name of the organization, the name of the team they play for. They can't see the name on their back, which is their own name. They already know that, motherfucker. They don't need to look down and remember that shit. They need to look down and remember who they're fucking playing for. They're playing for the guy next to you.
Right.
They're playing for the team as a whole to be better, right? There's... So the NBA, the 82-game NBA regular season recently started, right? About a month ago. I recently read an article about how it was the first game of the season. The Chicago Bulls lost to the Oklahoma City Thunder. And the first thing they did, they the very first thing is the head coach walked in and there was a bunch of people, a bunch of his players talking, and they were upset with each other. And he goes, hey, do you guys want me to leave? And they said, actually, yeah. Yeah, coach, we want you to leave. We need to have a players only meeting. After the first game. First game, they're already having a players only meeting. And what they ended up saying was everybody's playing for themselves and nobody's playing as a team. Nobody's trying to play for each other. They're only playing for themselves. And so they got to try to fix that. And so we'll see how it goes as the season moves forward and see if that actually sticks or not. But it was just one of those things where, you know, the leader of the team realized his team needed to hash a few things out. So he stepped away, right? The head coach, Billy Donovan of the Chicago Bulls, stepped away and said, I'm going to let my team work this out and we're going to come back better and stronger.
That's like poetry. Turning a manager into a leader. I don't want to take anything away from managers because there's some really great managers out there that know how to manage a budget and get everything done in a timely manner and this whole nine. But my problem with those type managers is a lot of times they lack the vision, which is what transitioned them into that leader. They can have the charisma to have the team work for them to the nth degree, but they need that vision to go past that whole manager step. And it just takes practice.
Yeah, it takes a lot of practice, and it takes a lot of self-awareness to go against your natural tendency. You know, you have to have that self-awareness to sit there and go, "Ooh, I'm slipping into some managerial practices and ticks. I need to really be a leader right now. I'm going to step away and let them try to do what they need to do, so I can focus on my other work and." Take some time to make sure that I don't fall back into those same routines.
Right. One routine that we do often. I mean, I think we do it every episode.
I think just about every episode.
How's your final third?
Ooh, final third. Nutty. So that's still kind of almond. A little bit of white pepper spiciness on the back end. Was just like a hint of like cocoa and coffee.
That's I'm getting pepper on the back end of mine also. Still got that creaminess like wood with some cedar. But pepper has definitely crept in. And you know what? I'm not upset about that.
So would you say single, five pack, or box?
I'm gonna go single.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go single. In my opinion, it's definitely not box worthy. It wasn't like, oh man, the transitions never. It wasn't that to that level. One or two because the flavors didn't like jump off at me. I mean, I enjoyed it. It's still a great cigar. I don't want to take anything away from the cigar itself, but I don't think I would be happy with a five pack either. One or two every now and again, I wouldn't be upset.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with you. So this cigar kind of roller coastered for me. At some points the flavors were, man, this is great flavor, and then other points the flavors were really muted. I think this is a one or two. I don't see me spending the money for a five pack. You know, if it was one of those like, hey, buy 3 5 packs, get a five pack free, I wouldn't be mad if this was my free five pack. But I definitely would not just go out and buy a five pack. It's definitely not box worthy. I would say definitely singles.
Well, Mr. Austin, we turn managers into leaders, and
we rehydrated
some cigars.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. I think this is a great episode. Definitely one of those things that people don't often talk about is, you know, how do I change from being a manager to a leader?
I thought I was a leader. That's, yeah. I've heard that from managers before, too.
Yeah, I thought I was a leader. Again, step one, recognize you're a problem. But until next time, my name is Austin.
And I'm Dice.
And remember, great leaders smoke great cigars.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to Leadership of the Leaf. The comments and opinions expressed by the host and guests does not reflect the opinions of those that broadcast this show, nor does it reflect any of our affiliates.